Ukraine's power grid under intense pressure as Russian attacks continue to hit energy infrastructure.
Once again, another shelling of the Dnipro hydroelectric power plant damaged the plant. And at this point, local authorities informed that the situation is very serious.
Plus, President Zelensky accuses China of pressuring countries to not attend an upcoming Ukraine peace summit.
Disappointed that some world leaders have not yet confirmed their participation in the peace summit. Unfortunately, there are also attempts to disrupt the summit.
And later in the program, a professional tennis player volunteers to trade his racket and sneakers for military gear and weapons to support his country. Today is Monday, June 3rd. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Ukraine imposed emergency power shutdowns in most of the country on Sunday, a day after Russia unleashed large-scale attacks on energy infrastructure. The sustained bombardments on Ukraine's power grid in recent weeks forced the government to institute nationwide rolling blackouts. Without adequate air defenses to counter assaults and allow for repairs, though, the shortages could still worsen as need spikes in late summer. Associated Press correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
The shutdowns were in place in all but three regions of Ukraine following Russia's drone and missile attack on energy targets that injured at least 19 people. Ukraine's state-owned power grid operator said the shutdowns affected both industrial and household consumers. Meanwhile, in Kyiv, nearly 1,000 people attended a ceremony honoring the memory of Ukrainian journalist Irina Sibuch. She was killed in action while serving as a volunteer combat medic in the Kharkiv region, where Russia started its offensive nearly a month ago. I'm Karen Shamas.
Anna Chernikova joins us now from Kyiv for the latest on the intensifying battlefield in another weekend of Russian assaults on the power grid. What can you tell us, Anna?
Over the weekend, Russian forces continue the shelling of the territory across Ukraine, mostly Odessa and Kharkiv regions. In Odessa region, there are reports about the damage of port infrastructure. Time to time, there is intensification of the shelling of Odessa and particularly of the port area. It looks like it depends on the level of import and exports which are happening through the port infrastructure. If we're talking about a Kharkiv region, which definitely remains the hottest spot for the past months, the past half a year, situation is getting, it looks like it's getting stabilized at the buffer zone, at the gray zone, but we can see that Russian forces had certain advance in that area, and at this point, the city of Vovchansk is the main a city where the battles are taking place. According to Ukrainian authorities, 70% of the city is under Ukrainian control. However, we hear reports that Russian forces continue to conduct a small group assaults around that area and in the city as well, and part of the city is under Russian control. Civilians who remain at the territory under Russian control are getting are basically hostage at this point. And Ukrainian forces predict, and Ukrainian president will Volodymyr Zelensky announced that Russian forces for the next wave of the assault in the Kharkiv region, so situation might get worse sometime soon.
It sounds like they're really continuing to unleash large-scale attacks on energy infrastructure.
Yes, the latest shelling that happened over the weekend also damaged once again, because this already happens not for the first time. Another shelling of the Dnipro hydroelectric power plant damaged the plant, and at this point local authorities informed that the situation is very serious, so it might be an accident if shelling continues, but at this point the power plant do not produce any power, any energy to the Ukrainian energy system, and this also caused the worsening of the situation on the Ukrainian energy market in general. So again, more blackouts are happening, more energy shutdowns are happening across across the country, including Kyiv and Kyiv region. As the plant is locating in the Dnipro region, which is close to the front line, it's not particularly the front line, but it's quite close.
And Anna, I hear a story that hasn't gotten too much attention is there are concerns within Ukraine about a video that's been circulating on the internet about the potential abuse of Ukrainian prisoners of war by Russian soldiers. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, so on Sunday, the video footage appeared across the internet, which is coming from the Russian soldiers. The video footage demonstrates that Russian soldiers carrying Ukrainian prisoners of war. It looks like they're walking them to the execution point, and then they are kind of shooting them, but do not kill them. The prisoners do not see anything because their eyes are closed and covered. And basically, the Ukrainian soldiers are getting beaten by the Russian soldiers, and everything is filmed by Russian soldiers. At this point, Ukrainian ombudsman Dmytro Lubinets appealed to the International Committee of the Red Cross and to the UN due to this video, which is circulating online. And Ukrainian authorities reported that one of the Russian soldiers who was on this footage was identified. So I think that this case will be ongoing and we will be hearing some updates soon. But at this point, this is what we have, and we will be following the situation and the developing of the story.
And lastly, turning to the battle in general, it sounds like the Netherlands is actually changing a bit of their policy on how Ukraine is being allowed to use their weapons and fighter jets.
Yeah, particularly the fighter jets F-16, which Ukraine is expecting soon, sometime soon. Some sources say that it might be at the end of summer or in the middle of summer. Some sources say that it will be by the end of 2024. But there is a number of countries which will supply Ukraine with such jets. And the Netherlands is one of such countries. The authorities of Netherlands just announced that they will allow Ukrainians to use the F-16 jets, which they will supply to hit targets on the territory of Russia. Other countries, some of the countries did not comment yet if they will allow Ukraine to hit the targets on the territory of Russia, but some countries have already said that at this point they're not planning to do so.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Thank you so much for the updates.
Thank you, Lori.
On Sunday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made an unscheduled appearance at Asia's biggest security conference being held in Singapore. Addressing attendees on the last day of the Shangri-La Dialogue Forum, Zelensky accused China of pressuring other countries not to attend an upcoming Ukraine summit aimed at bringing peace to his war-ravaged nation.
Disappointed that some world leaders have not yet confirmed their participation in the peace summit. Unfortunately, there are also attempts to disrupt the summit.
Dressed in his trademark olive green t-shirt, he asked leaders to support and participate at the event in Switzerland later this month.
We do not want to believe that this is a desire for monopolistic power in the world to deny the global community the opportunity to decide on war and peace.
From Singapore, Zelensky headed to the Philippines. More on that part of the story from Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has met with the Philippine president on a rare Asian trip to urge regional leaders to attend a Swiss-organized peace summit on the war in Ukraine that he accuses Russia, with China's help, of trying to undermine.
Thank you for participation of peace summit. That's very strong signal. Like I said, we have for today more than 100 countries.
Zelensky arrived unannounced and under heavy security in Manila late on Sunday after speaking over the weekend at the Shangri-La Defense Forum in Singapore. Zelensky was given a red carpet welcome with military honors at the Presidential Palace in Manila before meeting with President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Officials say Marcos has pledged that the Philippines would take part in the peace summit. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
China's foreign ministry spokesperson on Monday defended its choice not to join the planned peace summit, but said the decision is, quote, not directed against any party. Meanwhile, Monday, her office confirmed that Vice President Kamala Harris will travel to Switzerland on June 15th to participate in the summit and underscore the Biden-Harris administration's commitment to supporting Ukraine's effort to secure a just and lasting peace. She will be joined by National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan in representing the United States. Right-wing populist parties are expected to surge in three-day elections starting June 6th across the European Union for the bloc's parliament, capitalizing on voter anger and distrust of mainstream parties. Analysts predict the fallout could influence EU-wide policies like the environment, immigration, and foreign affairs, including potentially waning support for Ukraine in its war against Russia. Paris correspondent Lisa Bryant reports.
The Sunday market in Soupe-sur-Loigne, about 100 kilometers south of Paris, is a good place to meet locals, especially before France's June 9th European Parliament elections. A few years ago, many voters might have hesitated to chat with these members of the far-right National Rally Party. Less so today.
Il faut faire quelque chose parce que les gens ont du mal à...
Voter Frédéric Mocri says something has to be done because people have a tough time making ends meet. He's voted for the National Rally before and is not ashamed to admit it, he adds. And he says he will stick to his position. Polls forecast the National Rally could capture more than a third of France's EU Parliament votes, double the support for President Emmanuel Macron's ruling Renaissance Party. National Rally member Ivanka Esteban.
This type of governance, globalist, wokist, irrespectable sometimes of the issues that people like, it has repulsed people from this politics.
Under its leader, Marine Le Pen, the National Rally is a softer version of its scrappy anti-immigrant origins. It's focusing on basic issues like jobs and the economy, and no longer talking about leaving the European Union, just changing it. Jean-Yves Camus is a specialist on far-right politics at the French Institute for International and Strategic Affairs.
Everything is in favor of the National Rally for one good or bad reason. They have never been into power, nor alone, neither in a coalition. So many French voters say, okay, this is a bet. This is a bet on the future. But why not try? And if we are not happy with them, we'll throw them out as well.
The National Rally has another powerful asset, 28-year-old Jordan Bardella, who heads the party's list for the EU Parliament elections and has freshened its brand in a bid to widen its appeal among young voters.
Bardella is able, young, strong, willing, and he has no past record of belonging to an extreme fringe movement.
But not everybody likes Bardella's brand. First-hand memories of Nazi aggression make some older voters suspicious of nationalists. Market vendor Ndongo Baye, originally from Senegal, is against the National Rally's tough immigration policies. His children are French.
From son père qui disait immigration zéro.
His Senegalese grandfather is more than 100 years old, he says, and fought for France against the Germans during World War II. So when they talk about zero immigration, he says he can't accept that. The National Rally and other right-wing parties could perhaps be celebrating after these EU elections, but analysts like Camus say that may not necessarily translate into winning national elections, including the French presidential vote in 2027. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Soupe-sur-Loigne, France.
Meanwhile, as hundreds of millions of EU citizens prepare to choose the 720 members of the next parliament, young Europeans are reflecting on past promises and future hopes for the bloc. Two decades since most of the countries in Central and Eastern Europe joined the EU in 2004. Ilan Rubens with Reuters has the story.
My name is Kevin Caldolo. I'm from Estonia.
My name is Julia Klimkiewicz. I am 19 years old.
old. I am from Poland.
I am Damien. I come from Poland.
My name is Rosalie Volova. I'm 20 years old. I live in Czech Republic and I'm a student.
20 years ago, in 2004, most of Central and Eastern Europe joined the European Union. Today, the bloc is made up of 27 nations and almost 450 million people. On this 20th anniversary, Reuters spoke with young adults about the EU's impact on their lives and their vision for its future ahead of European Parliament elections in June. In the Polish capital city of Warsaw, 19-year-old Julia Klimkiewicz embraces the opportunities she says the EU has provided her.
I see the possibilities the European Union gives me because I was born in the European Union and I can travel freely across the EU. I can go on foreign student exchanges as part of the Erasmus programme.
Czech student Rosalie Volova echoes that sentiment.
I have relatively young parents, so our views on the EU are very similar. And I see better travel, the possibility of studying abroad, a better environment in the Czech Republic, and more work opportunities as advantages of EU membership.
Meanwhile, in the Polish countryside, 19-year-old farmer Damian Kreiser points out the unequal treatment Eastern European countries receive from the EU, particularly in terms of agricultural subsidies.
Eastern Europe is being treated in a different way by the European Union, and unfortunately you can see on the international stage that we don't have as strong a say, and we are being treated differently. For so many years, direct subsidies to farmers were supposed to be equal, but it hasn't been done yet. Western countries still have higher subsidies.
He says he's also concerned about the EU's environmental policy, saying it could undermine the bloc's economy. The EU has pledged to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050.
We will destroy the economy, our economy, our industry, our heavy industry and agriculture in favour of pseudo-ecology.
Kevin Kaldelu is a young entrepreneur based in Estonia, a country recognised for its vibrant startup scene. He praises the EU for providing grants that help companies explore different technologies.
So we get a lot of different grants as well that help companies actually push it further and try out different technologies. And we think it when we think of it in a bigger scale, then giving smaller countries and smaller companies the chance to really take risk and expand and try out different, either it's tech or deep tech, it has an effect on the whole European Union.
Fellow entrepreneur Ati Heinler also says the unified EU market has enabled startups to think internationally from day one. But he also acknowledges freedom of movement can be a double-edged sword.
I think there has been great benefit from it, but some countries have benefited disproportionately and some countries have lost disproportionately. For Eastern European countries in particular, there has been quite a lot of people moving from these countries to the Central and Western Europe.
The young people also spoke about their hopes as well as fears ahead of the EU Parliament elections in June, when many of them will be able to vote for the first time.
I think that the future of the European Union is focused around the target of building a clever migration policy, but also around reinforcing the European army. After the war in Ukraine started, we saw how naive a solution it is to rely solely and exclusively on NATO.
That report, produced by Elon Rubens with Reuters.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Russia's coordinated new offensive is centered on Ukraine's northeastern Kharkiv region, but seems to include testing Ukraine defenses in Donetsk farther south, while also launching incursions in the northern Chernihiv and Sumy regions. The city of Sumy, just 32 kilometers away from the Russian border and the Sumy region overall, have been shelled more times in the first 5 months of 2024 than during all of last year. Olena Adamenko visited the city for this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Residents of the Sumy, Ukraine neighborhood could feel the explosions on April 11th, when Russian troops launched guided aerial bombs at the thermal power station half a kilometer away. The next day, another guided bomb hit a factory 200 meters from their homes. Sumy resident Natalia Hancheruk says she opened the window to let in the breeze, and at that moment, a rocket hit. She still remembers the flame, how it rose bright orange up to the fifth floor. She says only after that did they hear the explosions and children started screaming. Although it's been over a month since the airstrike, local kids still can't get over what they witnessed. 15-year-old Alena Minchuk says she still doesn't sleep well. Every sound, even someone rustling, scares her. She says she's scared of everything now. In 2023, Sumy was shelled 351 times. This number has already been surpassed, not even halfway through 2024. In early March, a Shahed drone hit the city hospital, damaging its boiler room. Surgeon Yuri Vidmid was on duty that night. He says he was near the window when it happened. He could hear the Shahed and feel the explosion. First, there were flames, then everything went dark. No one was physically injured, but patients and doctors were emotionally shaken. Leonid Bondarenko, head of Sumy City Clinical Hospital No. 5, says the hospital had to summon its psychologists to normalize the emotional state of both patients and employees to the point where they could exist normally. Not just the city, but the whole Sumy region sees a lot of Russian shelling. Many villages are now destroyed, says journalist Alena Yatsina. An example is the Papivka village, she says. 150 people lived there this winter. Agricultural businesses worked there. Things were more or less normal, despite the village being on the Russian border. She says there is not a single living person there now. There are people there who died in March and are still under the rubble of their own homes, still not buried. As people flee, many leave their pets behind. Volunteers like Katerina Andreeva try and rescue the animals. She says the animals' owners would call them and say, "I left my dog at home. It has been there for about a week. If it's already dead, could you at least bury the body?" Andreeva managed to save about 50 dogs. A video of her and her friends rescuing a German shepherd quickly went viral on social media. She says today the dog lives with a loving family, adored by its new owners. This story will stay with the volunteers. According to the city administration, since the start of 2024 until mid-May, Russian shelling killed at least 45 civilians and injured 114 in the Sumy region. For Alena Adamenko in Sumy, Ukraine, NRIs, VOA News.
And finally, today, after Russia invaded Ukraine, professional tennis player Sergei Stakhovsky immediately volunteered to fight for his home country. Anna Kostuchenko has his story.
Fire!
In January 2022, professional tennis player Sergei Stakhovsky retired and applied to training courses in Kyiv's Territorial Defense Forces. In February 2022, he volunteered to join Ukraine's armed forces, just days after Russia invaded his home country.
I thought there would be no war, that the more people sign up for military service, the more famous people they are, the slimmer the chances of this war actually happening.
Before he signed up to fight, Stakhovsky won nearly half of his 500-plus professional tennis matches. He once beat Roger Federer at Wimbledon in what is considered one of the greatest tennis upsets of all time. At one point, he was ranked 31st in the world. On the battlefield, Stakhovsky served in a National Guard mortar unit. Then he took a break and raised money for the war effort for about 5 months. He and his tennis colleague Elena Svitolina raised about $3 million, he recalls.
I spent quite a lot of my own money. Also, my friend and godfather of my child, Sergei Rybrov, supported me. He involved football players from the National League, like Andriy Shevchenko. I raised donations and made purchases for the front line abroad, because I lived in Europe for a long time.
In 2023, Stakhovsky joined Ukraine's security service, and he is now deployed as a drone operator. He says he couldn't justify not joining the fight.
It is very difficult to travel abroad, raise money, tell everyone how difficult difficult it is for us, and while you are 37, you know how to use weapons, know what war is, and you could go fight yourself.
In over 2 years of war, Stachovsky has been in the battles for Bakhmut, Chasivyar and Avdiivka.
I'm used to it. It felt surreal in 2022, but now it's just a routine.
When Stachovsky gets back to Kyiv, he trains young players at a tennis school he co-founded. But those breaks don't last long, and he soon finds himself back on the front lines. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Kyiv and Donetsk regions, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.